Maggie Alfonsi once famously said to me, I don't mind if they criticise me for what I'm saying about rugby, but not the fact I'm a female with personality in rugby.
Hey everyone, I'm Katie Traxton and you are listening to Anatomy of an Agency, the podcast that lifts the lid on everything that goes on behind the scenes in the talent industry. In this episode, we speak to Ben Ball, who works on commercial partnerships for news outlets. You might recognise him as joint head of sport from Telegraph Media Company, as head of business development at World Rugby, or now in his role as senior director of sales and brand partnerships at Planet Sport Group. I asked him how long he's been working with talent.
When we first started moving into sales, I just did display advertising, so there was no contact with salespeople at all. We were just selling brand, talk sport, and lots of local radio stations. But eventually I moved into content sales, and from content sales, we had to work with the talent that were creating the shows. And as TalkSport grew, we started getting more and more talent onto the show, more recognisable talent like Ian Wright. We got more rights to games rather than peering over a fence.
Not just Ian Wright.
Yeah, we started peering over fences and reporting on things and saying, actually, we were just watching off television like anyone else could, but we were, for legal reasons, we had to do that at least four times a half. But as we started acquiring more official rights, we started working with more talent, brands started coming on board and wanting to work with us, either doing show sponsorships or special content for their activations in whichever sport that they were already in.
In your job, this is going to sound like a crazy question, but for the benefit of the rest of us, what do you mean when you say content?
So in the broadcast world, in the radio world, it was creating special shows. It was doing special features on the history of a certain sport, or preview shows to the World Cup, or asking people to sponsor Rugby World Cup or Football World Cup and creating special, unique assets for them that would allow them to distinguish themselves within the array of sponsors for that World Cup and give them stand out to an audience that we were broadcasting it to.
So basically, you show that as a channel, you understand how to cut through the noise with original content, and then you, or original programming, and then you explain to your sponsors that we can do this, except tailored to your objectives as well. Do you bring the talent, the sports people, on board when you're conceiving those ideas, or do you have the idea and then find someone to attach to it?
It's been varied. If you've already got the talent in-house, then we will try and utilize them as best we can, because it's cheaper than acquiring new talent to come on.
And they would be in-house because they're like a radio presenter or something already?
Yes. Or a columnist or something like that. Sometimes brands come with their own talent that we have to utilise, that they've worked with over the years. As an example, at The Telegraph with IBM, they worked with Matt Dawson, so we utilised him. We weren't told to utilise him, but he'd been doing lots of stuff, so it was in our interest to utilise him.
And the authenticity is obvious.
Yeah. But occasionally we will do brainstorms where we will then retrofit someone if we win it, because we don't want to waste people's time. So we'll go to agents or talent organisations and get suggestions in the first place. We'll put a list of five or six different options. Sometimes the client will have a view on that, sometimes our editors will have a view on that. But ultimately, we don't want to start negotiating fees early doors or too early when we haven't won it. A lot of these briefs are competitive briefs where there's four or five different organisations that are all vying for that one bit of business. So until you've really won it, you can't really start negotiating with talent.
During the course of your career, has the way talent is selected changed? So the reason I ask that is because my view is, but I could be completely wrong, you're about to let me know, that historically it was quite performance driven. Who's the best, or who's the best known, who's the most famous? Now there's a much greater impetus in the part of the sport industry I'm in for diversity, for storytelling, for telling us something that we've never heard about before. Yeah. Have you seen that shift?
Yes, the diversity has come into the media selection. We worked with Maggie Alfonsi at The Telegraph way before there were even female rugby columnists. And she once famously said to me, I don't mind being criticised, but I do mind being criticised for being a female rugby player who doesn't know what they're talking about when I've got hundreds of caps, hundreds of international medals. I don't mind if they criticise me for what I'm saying about rugby, but not the fact I'm a female sort of personality in rugby. And that really resonated with me, that actually we've come a long way from the early days of her writing columns and being front and centre of media, to now that we're actually challenging on her views and her sort of thoughts on rugby, not just because she's female and in a man's world as it was back then. But I think going back to selection, I think selection is really important, because you say that we've changed from just selecting the heavyweights that have been in the industry, but the criteria back in the day was storytelling. Are they interesting? Are they going to drive an audience to buy newspapers? Now it is, are they driving subscriptions? And you can see that hard data. Back when it was newspaper first, you didn't know why someone was buying a newspaper. It was a more rounded view. Now that talent is being challenged on what subscriptions and what page views they're driving. And at one point at the Telegraph, I'm not sure whether it was still there was a leaderboard of all of the journalists, all of the talent, in terms of who was driving the most subscriptions and who was driving the most page views. So that model's still there. They're still
Imagine
being challenged.
Everyone had access to that from every channel.
It was mind-blowing at the time, and people were pushing back and thought their careers were at risk.
Well, and to be honest, there is an existential crisis with a lot of the press, certainly the print press, and they're needing to shift online. So I kind of understand the thought, albeit that we don't want to commoditize people. You've been talking about being part of a commercial team in a newspaper. I think probably a lot of the listeners, like me, I think actually until we met Ben, might not know that there's this commercial team as well as the editorial team. So you know that adverts are sold,
yes,
and you know that there's editorial pieces, but this sponsored content, advertorial style, is something that I think a lot of us don't even realize exists. Can you explain what it is?
So commercial editorial, as we refer to it, is editorial. Sometimes it's made up of former journalists who were writing for that publication. Sometimes it's specialists that do commercial content. They come in with the objective of helping us to answer briefs. So they're not writing daily content for the newspapers or websites. They are there specifically to help with commercial content to maximize audience reach.
For a brand that you're working with?
For a brand that we're working with. Sometimes they will help with ideation. Sometimes they will help with keyword searches that help us get higher on SEO for searchable content. Not all media organizations have that. So at Planet Sport, where I'm now, the editorial team that write for Football 365 or Planet Rugby or Planet Formula One will also write the content for our clients, which actually for me is a better integration, because you're getting content from the journalists that you're consuming on a daily basis. One of the arguments of the commercial content team is it becomes detracted from the wider publications that they're writing for, or that the consumers are consuming that content for. So the content, the commercial content, is too distant from the regular daily content that they're consuming.
Well, and your clients, the brands, will want that to be as close as possible to editorial, despite the fact that it's meeting their objectives, I assume. So that kind of benefits everyone. If you are an athlete that's being asked to contribute to that commercial editorial, how much more restrictive is that? How much more likely are you to be given key messages than if you're just writing a column about the match at the weekend?
So there are two ways to look at that. So there was clear definitions, and the Advertising Association has clear definitions in terms of how much you need to label content. So there's a clear differentiation between how involved a brand is with the content. So sponsored content, in the way I would phrase it, is just a badge within the content. So the editorial individuals or the talent that's writing that content has no input from the brand. It's just in association with MasterCard or Emirates Airlines. Where there is clear involvement in terms of, did we submit the content idea to the brand for sign-off? Because it's around, we've just come from Marriott and George Russell, conversation around travel, for instance. Is George Russell being paid to talk about travel because he's sponsored by Marriott? Then we would say that is branded content.
If he isn't, he spent a long time talking about travel.
He did. And damaging hotel rooms by putting lights on and off and taking his own pillow and all sorts. Some amazing stories. But ultimately, so it really depends on the involvement of the brand and what we're actually signing off. So sometimes it's clear association between the brand and the bit of content. Sometimes it's just in association with.
So let's now talk about your time working rights holder side. So you kind of, you didn't quite shift because you didn't go to brand side. You weren't now the person necessarily buying the sponsored content. But it's very different moving from, in essence, being a channel to being the people who are providing the information into that PR channel or the press channel, the media. What did you learn? What new things did you learn when you suddenly were working with the rugby players as basically part of their extended team rather than the people trying to find good stories?
I suppose access in rugby is quite open anyway. Like a lot of players, former players, have access to current players. So actually when we were at Rugby Pass as an independent rugby channel, we had a lot of access to talent to utilise in campaigns. So nothing really changed as part of World Rugby, because World Rugby is not a team. So actually we were having to go through the same channels to access players to come and work for us. Maybe the fees went up slightly higher because it's World Rugby rather than an independent media organisation. So nothing in that sort of scenario actually changed for me on the commercial side of things. But we had our challenges. As a media organisation working in an international sports federation, we had to overcome a few political issues. We had 180 members of a committee sitting on our boards. We tried to retain editorial independence, but ultimately people weren't always happy with some of the content we were writing.
Does that make it harder to move on news? Does it mean you have a lag because you're looking for approvals?
In certain instances, yes, but in others, no. Because there were a lot of people fighting the traditional norms. It's very unusual. No one's ever done it before, having a media organisation with a sport federation. So everything was being challenged, but actually we were trying to stay true to Rugby Pass of old, under former owners. But it also opened up new opportunities as well. Having a Rugby World Cup in France in 2023 with greater access to video, greater access to the media sort of pits, access to players, opened up a whole world of opportunity. So whilst there were some that were more challenging, there were other opportunities that balanced that out.
Well, yeah, you need to find the balance, don't you, between having this bigger platform but also retaining what the fans loved about the fact that you were independent and agile. You were within an international rights holder. Did you have lots of colleagues from around the world who you learnt that their media, their rights holders, their perspective of sport was different to that which we have in the UK and how we engage with our athletes?
So a lot of World Rugby employees came from Australia, so my direct report was from Melbourne. She'd come from Tennis Australia. And so they all came from a pure sponsorship world. So actually understanding media in a sponsorship world was, some of the time it was us educating them in terms of the media landscape, who was buying media, where the briefs were coming from. Once we got a brief, what was the expectation in terms of the presentations that we had to send back? How was it being costed in a media plan? What talent were we including? So there was a lot of re-education on our part.
Your current organisation, Planet Sport,
yep.
You've not been there very long.
No.
Therefore, you've got a very fresh 2025 view of how things are done there. How is it you guys either work with sports people or want to be working with sports people in the future?
So Planet Sport have been there 6 weeks. It's a really cool organisation, working across multiple sports. Having worked in rugby for the last 5 years on an exclusive basis, it's actually quite nice to be operating in football, Formula One, rugby league outside of just pure rugby union, tennis, a bit of cricket as well. So I think for me, the diversity was what was really exciting. I think we work with talent in multiple ways, from pure editorial, so they're writing for us on a regular basis. For the Lions tour coming up, we've got Eddie Jones, which is something that we should be shouting about because Eddie Jones is a big name, controversial. I think he's going to be great for Planet Rugby. And I'm out in market now trying to diversify revenue across the websites and mobile sort of platforms that we have. Most of our revenue comes from programmatic advertising. So I'm in market trying to do more brand partnerships, trying to secure briefs from brands, looking at sponsorship. And that's where we probably haven't utilized talent or influencers as much as we could have done, because we've had a very straight line sort of model, revenue model previously. But we've been working with eToro across Planet Rugby, and it's opened up a whole world of opportunity where we've worked with people like Nick Easter or various other sort of rugby talent creating content features. And I think we've seen a world of opportunity where we can open up a new revenue stream by working with talent, by creating new forms of content, by writing and answering briefs and trying to be part of people's thoughts when they're looking to activate their campaigns. In an ideal world, when Marriott are thinking about doing a Formula One activation with George Russell, they should be thinking about Planet F1. When they're actually recording interviews with him on Sport Beach in Cannes, how can we utilize some of that content to extend it out beyond just the event that people have attended? Can we clip it up and distribute it across our channels? They're the sorts of things that I'm starting to think about and talking to people in market about, because then you've got a hard cost for putting on that event, but then you can extend that opportunity and that cost out across media to reach more customers that are going to come and buy hotel rooms at Marriott across the world, especially leading up to the summer.
Well, it's how brands can make their investment work harder for them and improve their return on it, and actually how fans can get more out of branded content, because they get all of the stories and all of the access to their favourite people from each sport, while also learning about opportunities with the brand partners you have.
And our journalists. So as an example, today Ilona Mar was doing something on Sport Beach again. I sent a few, five snippets over to our journalists about some of the lines that she used about wearing makeup to rebel against the traditional authorities in rugby. Now that can be turned into an article very quickly, like rebelling against authority, being this huge personality in rugby that's spanning entertainment and sport. The fact she said that rugby was too small to make a living out of, so she had to do that to survive and thrive now. I think these are all things that actually, if brands are involved in this particular event, there's opportunities beyond just that event, creating content and editorial, but also creating commercial editorial to expand their reach and spread the cost of, and some of them are quite significant costs.
A really great insight there from Ben into part of the industry that can sometimes be a bit of a mystery. Other than that, for now, from me, it is goodbye. But if you want to keep in touch, it's GVO at goodvibesonlytalent.com or social media at goodvibesonlytalent. Looking forward to hearing from you soon.